Jesus receives a question which typically he refuses to answer directly. How many of your people are going to be saved? Are they few who are going to be saved? The apostles are expecting a number, 50%, 80%, very few, 144,000. Well, God only knows. But Jesus doesn't play that game. He doesn't play that game. And the answer that he gives begins with the word that really is the theme of the entire gospel. The word is strive. Strive. Now, the word strive, I just had a thought. You could almost translate it as jihad in Arabic. But because it means struggle. It doesn't mean violent, of course. It means struggle. Now, what's he saying? Strive for what? Strive to enter through the narrow door. Struggle to enter through the narrow door. Because the door that leads to perdition is wide, and many there are who take it. And why? Because it takes no striving. It's easy peasy to do it, to go through the wide door. And what Jesus is basically saying is that being his disciple does not mean just saying, I believe in Jesus and I go to church. That is not what he means at all by being a disciple. And Jesus finds, you know, I was thinking of the other echoes that that this gospel brings. Because a lot of times, I think, you know, I've been a priest for going on 40 years. And the thing I most have to keep my temper with is superficial Christians. Superficial Christians are, and I do it, I keep my temper because I was a superficial Christian myself. And so I have to remember that God brings different people at his own time, not all, you know, whenever I want them to. But superficial Christians would like to check off the boxes and then basically leave me alone. Leave me alone. When what Jesus is after, what being a disciple is all about, is changing the way you think. See, being a Christian is not about coming to church. It's not about that. Coming to church is a help to being a Christian. But being a Christian, think about this. Being a Christian is being a disciple of Jesus. Now, what is a disciple? Well, a disciple is a student. And if you're a student, what are you doing? You're taking a course. What's the name of the course? How to be human, like God wanted us to be human. And why do we have to take a course in being human? Aren't we human? Well, the actual answer to that is no. We're really not fully human. Because, see, this one of the central teachings of the church is something called original sin. Original sin is not a sin that you committed. It's only used the word sin by an analogy. It's whatever happened in history as a consequence of humankind shifting away from what God wanted us to be. and the consequences of that. It's covered in the story of Adam and Eve. But always remember that Adam and Eve is a story. It's a story that tells a truth. It's not meant to be understood historically. It's meant, you know, I often tell people, it's kind of like the little boy who cried wolf. Was there ever a historical little boy who cried wolf? Most probably not. But there could have been, right? There could have been. Does it matter? No. And the reason it doesn't matter is that the point of the story is not the historical part of it. The point of the story is to tell you that if you lie all the time, when you need to be believed, no one will believe you. That is true, independent of the historical nature of that story. Adam and Eve is the same way. Adam and Eve, in some way or another, refused to be in relationship with God as creatures. You know, it's very interesting because the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. See, knowledge of good and evil in the ancient world, knowledge meant control over. If you had knowledge about something, you could control it. And so what the story is actually saying, it's the tree of the control over good and evil. You, the serpent, was basically saying, look, Adam and Eve, you don't have to do anything or listen to God at all. You can choose for yourself what is good and what is evil. So if God says to you, this is not good, you can say, I disagree, this is good. In other words, notice what's happening. Basically, what the serpent is saying is, you can become your own creators. You can choose what is good and what is evil on your own. And the moment, of course, that happens, there is this break. There's break, and Adam and Eve have no idea who they are. The effect of being noticing they're naked, which I always get a kick out of, because when they're hiding and God comes looking for them, God says, Adam, where are you? And he says, I was naked, and so I hid behind a bush. And then the question that I love, God says, who told you you were naked? Now think about that question. When you're in the shower, does anybody need to tell you you're naked? You know. Why did God say that? Because until that moment, the concept of nakedness had not even entered the human conscience. Had not entered. We're the only animal in the entire creation that knows whether we're clothed or naked. I don't presume you're going to go home tonight to your dog and say, you're naked. Okay? Or to your cat, you're naked. Okay? No. Because there's no such thing. No such thing as a concept of that. And so Adam and Eve split. And the result is we don't know how to be human. Another example I like to use is, imagine that you have worked on a PC from the beginning that has been infected by a virus. You have no idea what it's like to work on a PC that is uninfected. You think the infected PC is normal. Until you sit down at a PC that doesn't have any viruses, then you go, oh my God, this is the difference. That's what's happening. You and I don't know how to be human. And so because we're screwed up, we're basically saying to God, show us what it means to be a human being. When God becomes human in Jesus, he basically is saying to us, you know, what's that old saying? If you want something done, you do it yourself. God is basically saying, let me show you. Let me show you what I meant when I created human beings. Jesus is the human being par excellence. For us to be fully human is to be like Jesus and to admit that we're screwed up. And the process of changing your mind, because see, it's not just a process going to church and doing religious things and blessing yourself with holy water and doing all those, you know, and doing a few prayers and getting through, you know, a few rosaries and stuff like that. That's not the point. The point is to strive, to change the way you think, to change where your priorities are, to change the way that you recognize good from evil, to look at yourself as a human body and to say, what am I supposed to do with this thing? To look at at the time that you have on this earth and say, what am I supposed to do here? Where am I going? Where did I come from? And to establish the proper set of priorities so that you become like Jesus. That's why I've told you before, and to me this makes so much sense, the word worship. When you come to worship, the etymology is so simple. It's worth-ship. Ship is the art and practice of something. You're a student. And so you're studying, say you're studying art. You're studying from a master artist. You're studying artisanship. And so you're studying, and so ship is the art or practice of anything. Worth, the first W-O-R of worship, is the shortened version of worth. So worth-ship is basically saying, okay, what's worth the most in life? And what is the hierarchy? What's the order in which they are worth? And then living your life according to the correct things that are worthwhile. A messed up life is when you got things out of whack. You put things that are not worthwhile above. And please understand, that's a lot what society is going on out there. You got a society out there that has got its worth-ship screwed up. And every time you get from society, a lot of the learning that you're doing, either in watching TV or in responding to commercials or in doing all things, what you're doing is you're setting the list of priorities that you think are worthwhile. And you act on those priorities. And if those are not the priorities that God has given us, then your life's going to be screwed up. And you're going to wonder, well, God, why did you let this happen to me? Duh. Did you figure it out that you had it wrong? If you take a car apart and you don't put the parts in the right place, it ain't going to run. It's not going to run right. It follows. And so what Jesus is saying, listen to the word, strive. Strive, meaning do something other than float. Look, folks, it takes a live human being to swim against the current. You have a society that has a current. It's where everybody's going. And all of us have a tendency to just say, I'll just go along to get along. And if you do that, then don't be surprised when you where you end up. Don't be surprised. Because it takes, look, a dead body can float down the river. Doesn't take any effort at all. It takes no striving. You have to strive to move against the current. And I hate to tell you this, but we're living in a social situation where it's going, the current is pushing directly against being a Christian. Directly against it. And you will feel it at school. You will feel it in the workplace. You will feel it on the TV. And if you don't learn to recognize it, it'll feel normal. It'll feel normal, but this is normal. And you know why? Because you've allowed yourself to become that. And so it just fits what you have become. Every time that you strive to become more like Jesus, you're basically creating your character. If your character fits in to the norm of the world, something is very wrong. Because being a Christian a lot of times means that you don't fit in. You don't fit in extremely well. Okay? And, you know, I have this idea, and I think I said it to you sometime. I can't remember what I said when. But I think the day you and I die, that you and I are going to stand before this mirror. And the mirror is judgment. And the mirror is not going to reflect your body. The mirror will reflect the content of your character, basically your soul. You are going to see what you have chosen to become by the cuts that you have made into the wood of your character. See, the word character comes from karezen, which means carve. Every time you make decisions in your life, you are carving out your character. And judgment will be basically a let's sum up your character. Let's see what the constant decisions that you have made, what you have created of yourself inside. That's, I think, what judgment's going to be. And when that happens, you're going to have one of two choices. You're going to be able to look inside and go, oh my God. And then you're going to throw yourself down and ask God's mercy. Or you're going to look at yourself, and even though you're screwed up and messed up royally, you're going to say, hey, I like it. And you know what heaven and hell are? Heaven is when you throw yourself at the mercy of God. Hell is when you have gotten used to the taste of selfishness so much that you like the way that you taste. I'm out there a couple of times. One of my favorites things in that sign to put is to say, heaven is an acquired taste, and so is hell. Okay? When a person becomes so centered on selfishness, they get a taste for it. You kind of develop a taste for the self you have become. And you know what happens in that moment of judgment? You know how our Father says, thy kingdom come, thy will be done? And you are saying it to God. Well, in your judgment, in the judgment, if you say, I like me, I don't want to change to what you want. Basically, God's going to look at you and say, thy will be done. Thy will be done. Go for it. You chose to be a monster. Thy will be done. And that will be your idea. What the Catholic Church basically says is, you have chosen to be a monster for the rest of eternity. Okay? Monster. Basically, a spiritual Frankenstein for the rest of eternity. And so what Jesus is saying is, look, You got to strive. You can't just let it happen. What it means then is several things. First of all, study. Notice what the very first thing I put, study. And why do I put study? Because you make the decisions of your life based on what you know. And what you know, you get from other people who teach you. You don't come into this world pre-programmed totally. You come with a little bit of programming. Okay? You basically know how to eat, poop, and maybe cry, and a few other things. But the rest of it has to be programmed. And your parents take care of it when you're little. But when you're older, you are in charge of your own self. You're in charge of your own mind. How will you choose the good if you have no idea how to do it, how to be a follower of Jesus? You know, one of the saddest things I find here, not here, it's in every church. We work our tails off to give, to help people to have classes in Spanish and in English and workshops and all kinds of stuff. And then we'll put on a workshop and 10, 15 people will show up, or maybe 40 or 50. And when 40 or 50 show up, we go, wow, that was a success. And inside I'm thinking, you know, if I worked for corporate America and only 50 people responded to an advertising campaign, I would be fired. I would be fired. Do you know how many parishioners we have in this parish? Probably about 10,000 individuals, 10 to 12,000 individuals, and we get 40? What percent is that? 0.04 or something like that? Percent? And those, the issue is, why do we give that stuff? To give you opportunities to strive, to give you opportunities to learn. Second, take the time to pray. Just read the scriptures. Praying, by the way, is not just our Father who art in heaven, have thee an enemy. No, you don't do that. That's like, I hate it when I hear people. I remember when I was a little kid, the rosary. It never relieves me. I grew up in Spanish. Well, I didn't grow up in Spanish. I grew up in Cuba speaking Spanish. Okay? But I still remember the rosary. You know how the rosary goes in Spanish? Dios te salve, Hail Mary. Dios te salve María, llena eres de gracia. El Señor es contigo, bendita tú eres entre todas las mujeres y bendito es el fruto de tu vientre Jesús. Santa María, Madre de Dios, ruega por nosotros pecadores, ahora y en la hora de nuestra muerte. Amén. That's the Hail Mary in Spanish. You know what I remember? Okay, people standing like this. And the rosary, kind of like a weapon in hand. And they would go, Salve María, llena de gracia, Señor, contigo bendita tú eres entre las mujeres, bendito es tu fruto, tu vientre Jesús. Santa María, Madre de Dios, ruega por nosotros pecadores, ahora y en la hora de nuestra muerte. Amén. And I'm sure God's up there going, oh, I am so honored. I'm so honored by that. Folks, that's not the way to pray. Pay attention. And it's about, read the scriptures. Go to retreats. You know, get together for prayer groups. And if you can't, read something. Remember the definition of prayer. Anything that lifts your mind and heart to God. It's very wide. Anything that lifts your mind and heart to God is prayer. Walking in nature and talking to your Father. Listening to Christian music, but listening to the words, reading the Bible, reading some other good book. One of the things that you might want to start looking at in the website under the heading of homilies at the bottom, we're going to start a section on books that I'm going to recommend to you that you read for your reading, so that some of you who worked a lot who can't come to any of the classes, at least you can buy a book and read it online, or you read it at home. But the important thing is strive. Strive. Don't let yourself, and remember ultimately what Jesus said. And I'll close with this. I'll close it. Remember in the book of the Apocalypse, Jesus says, you are neither cold nor hot. I would prefer that you are either cold or hot. But because you are lukewarm, I spit you out of my mouth. What he's saying is, Jesus actually prefers an honest atheist who is seeking and striving for the truth than a Christian who is lukewarm and doesn't give a damn. That's basically it. Now, I'm not being rough on anyone because I used to be that way. But don't be surprised if someday, if you're a lukewarm Christian, and someday God comes and slaps you upside the head, and something happens to you and you go, oh my God, what's happening to me? Why did God let this happen to me? And God said, you had enough, you know, and it'll happen to you again. Until you get the idea that this is not a game. We're not here to just go coasting and be happy doing whatever we want. Strive. Strive to enter by the narrow gate. Strive to become human the way Jesus taught us to be human. God bless. Let us pray.